The history of the West has been mostly Christian.
Diseases, land grabs, and outright massacres led to the annihilation of entire communities.
Sacrifice, service, affinity with the victims, courage, and above all, humility.
For someone to say love your enemies, that just sounded foolish.
Put it in practice, and you'll have a major contribution to a peaceful world.
From the Center for Public Christianity, you're listening to Life and Faith. I'm Natasha Moore. You've probably heard of the Good Samaritan, this parable Jesus told about a man violently robbed and left for dead on the road to Jericho. A couple of religious types come by, and instead of helping the guy, they give him a wide berth. And it's a Samaritan, a kind of social outcast, who actually stops and rescues him. It's a really brief story and one that's had a disproportionate impact on our world. Whatever people think of Jesus, we still use this phrase, Good Samaritan, in the names of hospitals and charities, in politics often, and in everyday language to describe the kindness of strangers. But there's another story Jesus told. It's not quite as well known, but equally, it's been revolutionary for how we today think about the poor, the sick, the struggling. This story is called The Sheep and the Goats, and it describes this scene of an ultimate day of judgment. Here's Jesus, here's all the nations gathered before him, and he's judging them. He's separating them, it says, like a shepherd separates sheep from goats, which I guess is a thing that shepherds do. The sheep go to the right, the goats to the left. The criteria that he's using for judging them, though, may come as a bit of a surprise. To the sheep on his right, the king, Jesus, says, "Come, take your inheritance and your kingdom, for I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I was ill and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me," and so on. And these sheep are a bit like, did we? Just jog our memories here. When was that exactly? And he replies, "Whatever you did for the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." Then the goats. It doesn't go well for them. He says to them, "Depart from me, you are cursed and not blessed, for I was hungry and you gave me nothing to eat. I was a stranger and you didn't invite me in. I needed clothes and you did not clothe me." And on it goes. Equally, this lot are like, "What? No, we didn't. When did we see you and not help you?" And the king is like, "When you failed to do any of that for the people who seemed least important, actually, it was me you were ignoring, refusing to help." It's a breathtaking and chilling story. And Christians haven't always taken it seriously, but some have, very seriously. In this episode, we're looking at sickness and health. It's one of the topics we cover in our documentary, For the Love of God, How the Church is Better and Worse Than You Ever Imagined. I'll give you a sneak peek into some of the stories we tell in this area. Mostly, though, I want to tell you a bit about what is probably the world's oldest surviving charity, one which was particularly inspired by Jesus' story of the sheep and the goats. This is a story that didn't quite make it into the doco, but I think it needs to be told.
What is the sovereign military order of Malta, Rhodes, and Jerusalem, or Jerusalem, Rhodes, and Malta, actually? It's the oldest continuing order of chivalry in the world. It was founded around...
This is Ian Benson. He's Professor of Law at the University of Notre Dame, Australia. He has worked on human rights charters around the world, and he's also a member of what is called the Order of Malta.
I joined it because I was doing work on ethics related to euthanasia and came to believe very strongly that palliative care is essential and it is the best response to suffering. I gave a paper to the Order of Malta and they invited me to join them. That's what happens. You get asked in.
The Order of Malta has a lot of names, actually. They were founded as the Order of the Knights of the Hospital of St. John of Jerusalem. A bit of a mouthful. They get called the Order of St. John, the Knights Hospitaller, the Crusader Knights of Rhodes, the Knights of Malta, the Sovereign Military Order of Malta. You get the idea. After they're kicked out of the Holy Land, they end up ruling the island of Malta for like more than 250 years. So that's where the Malta bit comes from. You would probably recognize the Maltese cross. This is like an eight-pointed cross, and it's the symbol of this order, the Order of St. John, or whatever you want to call them.
Its purpose is to serve, as they put it, our Lord's the sick. And its function is to work with the poor and the sick on important projects around the world. The Knights Hospitaller, as they were known, as the name suggests, they were dedicated to hospital work. They got permission to set up the first hospital in Jerusalem. They were connected with the Crusades, and they're a sovereign military order. Why? Because they had to, in the course of their work, actually defend, sometimes with sword, their work of being hospitallers.
So these guys, the Knights Hospitaller, they are older than the Crusades. They set up this hospital in Jerusalem, and it's cutting edge in its care and its compassion. They care for everyone, not just for Christians visiting the Holy Land. They make sure to serve chicken instead of pork to their Muslim and Jewish patients. By the 12th century, the hospital is described as being able to house 1,000 patients. Now, as Ian Benson notes, they're a military order as well as hospitallers. They're knights, they're aristocrats and warriors. But the chief vow they take is to honour our Lord's the sick. Our Lord's the sick. It's a weird phrase, but not so weird in context of that story that Jesus told about the sheep and the goats. The point is that they look at a sick person, any sick person, rich or poor, Christian or Muslim or Jewish, and they see Jesus, their Lord. And so they care for him or her. When Jesus was like, the suffering of the earth, the cold, the hungry, the sick, the imprisoned, consider them to be me, the Knights of St. John take him seriously. This means that in Jerusalem in the 11th century and later in Malta, they treat sick people really, really well. Their hospital in Malta from the 16th century becomes renowned throughout Europe. The poor flock to it. Every patient gets given a single bed. This is a luxury unknown to everyone but the rich. Many of them would never even have slept in a bed before. The knights use silver cutlery for hygiene. They develop complex surgical techniques. They treat every patient with respect and even reverence. Our Lord's the sick. The Order of St. John, or the Knights Hospitaller, or the Order of Malta still exists today. Who says chivalry is dead? People like Florence Nightingale and Nelson Mandela were honorary members, as well as Ian Benson, of course.
It's got diplomatic relations with many countries. It's recognized by the UN as an observer. And it has independent land in Rome, a small chancery there that actually is its own land. It's not owned by Italy, like the Vatican, but even smaller.
It's also got offshoots. St. John Ambulance, most people will have heard of, it was founded as a British branch of the order in 1877 to train people in first aid so that they could deal with the aftermath of the Industrial Revolution, all the accidents and injuries that would happen in the course of factory work. You'll see St. John Ambulance services at concerts or sporting events like the Australian Open, and they still provide the main ambulance service in Western Australia and the Northern Territory. They do things like HIV care around Africa, disaster preparedness training in Latin America and Asia. And they have an eye hospital in Jerusalem with outreach teams that travel to the West Bank and Gaza to bring eye care to patients regardless of their ethnicity, religion, or ability to pay. They're nearly 1,000 years old and still going strong. And all inspired by that story Jesus told more than 1,000 years before that. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. In sickness and in health. It's probably something you've heard at a wedding or two, but it also sums up what it's looked like when Christians have followed through on Jesus' teaching about caring for the poor and especially for the sick. The story of the Knights Hospitaller, or the Order of St. John, among its many names, is one of those cool stories that I wish we'd been able to include in our documentary, For the Love of God, How the Church is Better and Worse Than You Ever Imagined. Especially as it would have meant filming in the original hospital from the 11th century. This was only uncovered by an archaeological dig about 5 years ago when someone tried to build a restaurant on the site. not to mention in Malta, which the knights governed from the 16th to 18th centuries. So cool locations, but it was not to be. One of the things that did make it into the documentary was how unusual and attractive this kind of care was in the Roman world when Christians first started practicing it. It seems to have played a big part in why so many people joined this new movement in those first few centuries. Jesus had made it clear that his followers should show mercy and compassion to the sick and dying. So when terrifying plagues swept across the Roman Empire, it was a moment of truth for the fledgling churches. One such plague hit in about 165 AD. It was probably either measles or smallpox. This plague lasted about 15 years. There was another one that started in 250 AD and lasted almost 20 years. At the height of these plagues, up to 5,000 people were dying every day in Rome alone. The healthy, doctors included, fled the cities to save their lives. But the Christians didn't. They stuck around and tended to the sick. And not just their own sick, but to everyone. Lots of them died. But also, lots of people decided to throw their lot in with the Christians as a result. Here's Professor Lynn Coick from Wheaton College.
Well, Christians believe that each person is made in the image of God, and thus each person should be cared for, even if they are very ill. And so Christians were known to care for people who had the plague. And this shocked pagans, who were really anxious to get out of the way of any kind of sickness. They just would flee a city or a town, and the Christians stayed. That made a real impact on the pagans, who wondered, how could these Christians love, even at the cost, perhaps, of their own lives?
This is one way of looking at it, that people were drawn to this demonstration of sacrificial love. It was beautiful, compelling. Rodney Stark, who is a sociologist at Baylor University in Texas, he offers an explanation that maybe sounds a tad more cynical.
It turns out that just giving people liquid and some sustenance, a lot of people would recover from the plague. But if you basically run away from them or push them into the street, then it is a fatal disease. I mean, if people are willing to treat it, a lot of people will survive. Well, you know, the pagans looking around realized their Christian neighbors were surviving the plague when they weren't. And of course, it appeared to be a miracle. I mean, this has been studied by a lot of people with proper medical knowledge, and people have even done analyses of early graveyards. And, you know, even back then on the tombstones, you put date of birth and date of death, and have concluded that Christians were living much longer than their pagan neighbors on average way back in the early days of the church. Quite remarkable.
We take it for granted today that caring for the sick is a good thing, even a heroic thing, not to mention an obligation for a civilized society. But in the West, this is largely the inheritance of a Christian worldview, of stories that Jesus told, like the Good Samaritan and the sheep and the goats, and of the people who took them seriously. Our documentary tells the story of people like Fabiola, who was a wealthy convert who founded the first public hospital in Rome in about the year 390. And Father Damien, the leper priest of Molokai, who lived with and served the lepers of Hawaii for decades and died of the disease himself. The 19th century philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche spoke out of a radically different worldview when he condemned Judaism and Christianity for giving special attention to the sick. He thought it was unnatural.
This Jesus of Nazareth, the incarnate gospel of love, this Redeemer bringing salvation and victory to the poor, sick, the sinners, was he not really temptation in its most sinister and irresistible form?
This actor does a pretty good Nietzsche. This comes from The Genealogy of Morals, a book that Nietzsche wrote against what he called the moral prejudices of Christianity.
Preventing the sick from making the healthy sick, this ought to be our supreme object in this world. But for this, It is above all essential that the healthy remain separated from the sick, that they should even guard themselves from the look of the sick, that they not even associate with the sick. The higher must not degrade itself by becoming the tool of the lower.
Nietzsche's not alone in these kinds of ideas, though his expression of them is more extreme than most. For instance, I read recently that when inoculation was first introduced, there were people who argued against vaccines because it would mean lots of people lived who were meant to die, that we need diseases like smallpox and measles to winnow out the weak, and vaccination would therefore weaken the human race as a whole in this kind of survival of the fittest narrative. You'd think getting rid of a disease like smallpox would be a self-evident good, but that idea itself isn't something we can necessarily take for granted. For most of us, we can probably acknowledge that actually we're not the fittest. We're more likely to count as the weak. We've all needed or we will need a hospital at some point in our lives. So it's not too hard for us to see something beautiful in Jesus' stories of the Good Samaritan and the sheep and the goats and the ways that they've changed our world.
I think the thing that stands out in my mind about the early church was its care of the disadvantaged, that no one was beneath dignity, that everybody mattered, and that consequently people in the greatest need, serious efforts were made to help them and relieve them.
From the Center for Public Christianity, you've been listening to Life and Faith with Natasha Moore. Our documentary, For the Love of God, How the Church is Better and Worse Than You Ever Imagined, is in cinemas from May 9. We explore the good, the bad, the ugly, and the unexpected when it comes to the impact of Christianity on our world. Go to betterandworse.film to buy your tickets or to host a screening for your community. We've been featuring interviews and stories from our doco in recent weeks. You can catch up on those and subscribe to our podcast if you haven't already. Just hop on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and type Life and Faith in the search box to find us. Next week,
the Albigensian Crusade is in many ways an anomaly in medieval Europe. It is shocking to people at the time. The war is exceptionally brutal, exceptionally bloody. And I don't mean that as a modern person talking about the Middle Ages. I mean, again, people in the moment point out how brutal and bloody the Albigensian Crusade is.